Any process involving the federal government can take a great deal of time unless it's a fire recovery project that involves timber salvage. The Klamath National Forest is moving swiftly on its West Side Fire Recovery Project to do some work in three major areas of the forest burned in last summer's fires. The work includes plans for salvage logging. The draft environmental impact statement on the West Side Fire Recovery Project is out now, and the forest will take comments until April 13th on it. Those comments will no doubt include several shepherded by our guests today, both with concerns about the West Side Fire Recovery Project from a conservation perspective. George Sexton is with the Klamath Siskiyou Wildlands Center, generally known as KS Wild. He's the conservation director. George, welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Jeff.
And we have Craig Tucker with us as well, the Klamath campaign coordinator for the Karuk Tribe in California. Welcome, Craig.
Thanks for having me.
So, Craig, let's start with you. Give us the general slant on what the feeling is in the Karuk Tribe about the general direction of the West Side Fire Recovery Project.
Well, to make a long story short, we think what Klamath National Forest is trying to do is a continuation of a flawed land management policy that has made our forests and landscapes more prone to catastrophic wildfire. These epic fires we've seen in recent years, we assert, is a direct result of 100 years of fire suppression and then the logging practices followed by the plantation trees or planting of tree plantations that have really made our forests more prone to these large-scale wildfires.
All right, so not very happy with the plan as presented. And George Sexton, let's get the take from the Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center.
Sure. One thing I'd like to clarify is what the Forest Service means by the word recovery in the project title. And they aren't talking about recovery of watersheds or wildlife habitat or forests. Rather, the word recovery for the Forest Service there refers strictly to making money through logging post-fire ecosystems. And so that focus, that single focus on exploiting a post-fire environment to maximize economic return to Forest Service ignores a lot of other values that many Americans find in those public lands, in particular, wildlife habitat and watershed values.
We have a question already from David in Ashland. He asks, how much of the work is restoration and how much is logging? Why are soils so delicate and should logging be done with helicopters? Do they cut any live trees? Does salvage logging encourage larger backburning during fires and other forms of arson? Why don't you take a swipe at that, George?
Boy, that's a lot of good questions right there. I think I'll start with what the Forest Service is proposing as far as reforestation. And Craig touched on this, but it's important to realize that the forest stands that tend to burn at the highest severity are the young fiber plantations that the Forest Service has established after previous logging. And that's for two reasons. One, it's because the canopy of those fiber plantations is so low and close to the ground. And second, it's because the stems of those young trees are very close together. They're very dense. And so both with previous logging that the Klamath National Forest has done and then with this proposed salvage logging, they replant those stands very close together with these fiber plantations that contribute to fire effects that many people don't want to see. Several studies came out of the Biscuit Fire that, you know, a lot of folks are familiar with. One was the Donato study, another was the Thompson study. And both of those looked at the effects of salvage logging on forest reforestation and on fire hazard. And both of those studies, which were local, found that the practices that the Forest Service is proposing, the clear-cut salvage logging followed by the fiber plantation establishment, increase future fire hazard and decrease the natural regeneration of a conifer forest.
Now, when you call them fiber plantations, these tend to be the single-species so-called monoculture plantations?
That's no longer the standard practice for the Forest Service. They'll plant several different species of conifers. The hardwoods tend to get pretty short shrift from the Forest Service because they're really kind of in the business of growing fiber you know, for monetary purposes. But it's the density and the single age that are the problem.
All right. And Craig Tucker, you had mentioned right at the outset that, that 100 years of fire suppression has a lot to do with this. And so as you look at the Westside Fire Recovery Project document, which is 300 pages plus, as we pointed out last week when the folks from the Klamath National Forest were here, does it look like they're essentially doing the same thing to the forest once they've cleared out the merchantable timber?
Yeah, it's very similar. And you know, there are some good elements to what the Forest Service has put forth in terms of restoration and post-logging treatments of landscape, but there's really no guarantee that any of those things happen. So, you know, what is guaranteed is if this project goes forward, they'll get in there and they will cut the trees. But there's not a lot of guarantees that post-timber harvest, that the work to go in there and rehabilitate the landscape will actually happen. So that's a big problem for us. And I would just point out that Native people managed this landscape for thousands of years and used fire as a management tool. And these forests weren't just, these wildernesses that were untrammeled by humans. They were well managed for thousands of years using fire purposefully, because Native people depended on acorns as much as they did salmon for their sustenance. So this was a managed forest before the Forest Service ever showed up. And I think the Forest Service must have thought that the Native folks were a bunch of pyromaniacs when they went out and started lighting fires in the fall. What Western science is slowly catching up with traditional ecological knowledge, these traditional management practices of Native people, and understanding that fire has a natural role in the ecology of these places.
And
so what we want is a project that makes our forest fire resilient so that fire can be reintroduced and play its sort of normal role in the landscape.
It sounds like by definition then, Craig, that would have to be a fairly staged process where you'd take some stuff out of some areas if you're going to take anything out of the forest, and we can establish that down the road here. But you'd have to do it in stages, because forests that are resilient to fire tend to have a lot of different ages and sizes of trees and growth in them, don't they?
Yes. And, you know, we're not advocating that nothing be cut. It's more of how you do it and what you do after the cutting that's a big issue for us.
All right. And how about you, George Sexton? How does KS Wild feel about cutting anything in there?
Well, I'd like to contrast what the Klamath National Forest is proposing with Westside post-fire with what the Goose Nest District of the Klamath National Forest proposed out of the same fire year. The Goose Nest District had a salvage sale called Little Deer that has already been offered. And with the Little Deer salvage sale, they focused their proposed logging on roadside safety and on the matrix land use allocation, which is where the Northwest Forest Plan projected timber volume coming from. And they focused their logging on previously managed stands with an idea of trying to get fire back in there in the future. And so they didn't cut a bunch of shortcuts and target key salmon watersheds for clear cutting, or try and use fire as an excuse to log the old growth reserves. And that Little Deer salvage project has gone through with smooth sailing and a lot of community support. And so that's the kind of planning effort that I think a lot of folks would like to see, more collaborative and more science-based. The Westside project, the Klamath has made clear from the beginning that they're pretty much going to ram it through down people's throats regardless of what the science says and what the effect on the landscape is going to be. And so that's why they're seeking all these insulations from the normal planning process, you know, trying to speed up the NEPA commenting process, trying to insulate themselves from any appeals or objections, and just trying to get the clear cutting of the steep slopes started as quickly as possible. So again, I'd encourage folks to look at that Little Deer project if they want to see a more responsible and science-based means of dealing with a post-fire ecosystem that also produces some timber and results in a safer transportation system.
We're talking about the West Side fire recovery project in the Klamath National Forest. We had the folks from the Klamath here talking about it last week. This week we have George Sexton, who's the conservation director at KS Wild, talking to us, along with Craig Tucker, the Klamath campaign coordinator for the Karuk tribe. Your thoughts and comments are welcome at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. George, a follow-up, if you would, on what you just said about appeal insulation. That tends to happen from a congressional level. Is there anything like that protecting the West Side Fire Recovery Project from administrative appeals?
Yeah, the Forest Service here is really throwing out the rule book, and they're seeking what's called an emergency situation determination, and that would allow the timber to be sold and the clear cutting to start as soon as the Forest Service signs the record of decision for the project. And so that means that there won't be any outside review of what the Forest Service is proposing before a timber purchaser gets the timber and before the logging starts. That's a pretty extraordinary remedy because it means that, you know, it's just the forest supervisor kind of playing king and saying, this is how it shall be. And it creates a zero-sum game where instead of an outcome like you could see at Little Deer, where hopefully you produce some timber and you also do some good things for the landscape, the West Side Project, it's much more likely that either the Forest Service will be able to just begin clear cutting and really do some significant and long-term harm to wildlife habitat and watersheds, or that the whole thing gets stopped. It's very high-stakes kind of poker from the Klamath National Forest, and it's a shame that that's the route that they've chosen. There are a lot of stakeholders with good intentions who would have liked to have worked with the Forest Service to try and come up with a proposal that really did focus on getting fire back on the landscape, community safety, and making sure that watersheds and wildlife don't get irreparably harmed in the process.
Craig Tucker, how much input has come from the Karuk tribe to the Forest Service on the West Side Fire Recovery Project, and did you feel like it played any part in what the alternatives were as presented in the draft environmental impact statement?
Well, we charge that the Forest Service failed miserably in its obligations to have consultation with the tribe. You know, the fairly recognized tribe, there are requirements that federal agencies consult with us if they're making decisions that affect the tribe's resources. And certainly this project meets that standard. We had to complain to kind of get the consultation process going. We have had ongoing meetings with us, which led to a Karuk alternative being included in the draft EIS, although our alternative was just included as an appendix without very much discussion. So we have got our two cents in, as it were, but we don't feel like we've been part of the planning process. You know, we think the tribe should be a partner in planning these landscape-scale actions that affect, this is right in the heart of Karuk's Aboriginal territory. So we're very disappointed in that, and that's an issue we continue to raise. And the other thing I would just note is this we think is part of a disturbing trend nationally with the way the Forest Service is approaching timber sales. You know, the Forest Service, it is challenging for them to get approvals for large-scale timber sales because they do have dramatic environmental impacts. And so instead of going through the normal process and, you know, giving the public the normal opportunities to comment and appeal decisions, this is being done under the pretense of an emergency, and is similar to the way the Rim Fire was handled at Yosemite. And I would just note that this project is twice the size of the Rim Fire project, and they're trying to go through the approvals process twice as fast. So what they're trying to do is pull off a huge timber sale and do it as fast as possible, as quickly as possible, so that tribes and nonprofits don't have an opportunity to react and have their input into what the project looks like at the end.
Craig, the rationale we often hear from the Forest Service and the timber industry for the need for speed with a salvage project is that trees rot if you leave them up there too long. What's your response to that?
There are examples like there are other examples where they're post-fire logging. Those trees can stand for years without losing timber value. So the idea that if we don't immediately cut down all these trees, they're going to lose all their timber value, we don't think bears out to scientific scrutiny.
All right, we have a call here from Pat in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about fire recovery in the Klamath, specifically the West Side Fire Recovery Project, with Craig Tucker representing the Karuk Tribe and George Sexton from KS Wild.
Oh, hello, gentlemen.
Hi.
I just an observation, a question. An observation was I was involved in, after the Biscuit Fire, the recovery, I guess that's what you call it, at the Boy Scout camp on the Illinois River. And if you want to see the difference between when you recover and actually manage a stretch of timberland versus when you don't, go up there because it's startling, the difference. The question about what happens to timber if you leave it standing, in that case, subsequent to the Biscuit Fire, the area around the Boy Scout camp was just left standing, what was standing, and it burnt again, and the Boy Scout camp didn't. And I attribute that to active involvement in management. And then the question I have for the two people here is that Klamath County is an ONC county, I think, I'm pretty sure, and obviously the timber sales help fund public safety. Now, I live in Grants Pass, where all of Josephine County used to be funded by timber sales, and of course, that's probably the reason why we don't have publicly funded libraries or publicly funded sheriff's departments. What's your solution to those small communities? And don't tell me tourism is the answer, because it doesn't pay the bill.
Okay, a couple things here just on geographical levels. I'd failed to mention that the Klamath National Forest is based in Wairika and almost entirely in California, so not in Klamath County, Oregon.
Okay,
so not an ONC county.
Okay, well, the question actually is kind of germane, maybe to KS Wild, because I know they have activities in Oregon. So I'm looking for a solution, because I work pretty hard at trying to find ways to fund local government. I'm looking for a solution from maybe KS Wild about, okay, what's your answer for this?
This is Craig with the tribe, and, you know, we want tribal members to have jobs, and tribal members for many years have worked in the timber industry as loggers and fallers and worked in lumber mills, and so we're not a zero-cut tribe. What we're saying is the approach here has to be responsible, and the alternative we put forth has about a third as much logging in it, salvage logging, as the Forest Service plan. And so it's less, but that's still a significant amount of timber. So we think that if the Forest Service and others want to have timber to be part of our economy, and we do want that, then we have to work out the details in a collaborative effort. Otherwise, this thing's going to get jammed up in courts, and it's not going to happen. The jobs aren't going to be there. We're not going to get the timber out. If we can work together and come up with a plan that we can all agree provides jobs while at the same time protecting our water quality and protecting our natural resources, we can go forward and have economic opportunities.
Okay. George, anything you want to say about what Pat had to say?
Yeah, I thought Pat's two questions couldn't have been more important. The way I understood it was, one, you know, does salvage logging contribute to the ecological recovery of places that are logged? And two, how do we try and help counties that have a lot of federal land in their counties, particularly the ONC counties, with county funding? And with the first one, I'm very familiar with the Boy Scout camp and the logging that occurred there. And one of the things that happened there is that the Boy Scouts aren't managing that land for fiber production. So they didn't follow up the logging with planting a really dense fiber plantation, which is what the Klamath National Forest is proposing. And a place that I bet a lot of your listeners are familiar with would be the Babyfoot Lake trailhead, which was logged during the Biscuit Fire. Mm-hmm. It was clear cut and then replanted, and directly adjacent to it is the Calmeopsis Wilderness, which you enter when you go to Babyfoot Lake, which was not clear cut logged and not replanted. And the reforestation that's taking place in the wilderness is much more vigorous is much patchier and it's much healthier than what's occurring in the clear cut that you walk through to get to that trailhead. As far as county funding, that really has been, you know, front and center, particularly for the BLM here in Oregon, maybe more so than the Forest Service. And KS Wild has a couple of recommendations on that. One is that there is no more boom-bust form of logging than salvage logging, post-fire logging. We think that the best way to have a sustainable and predictable supply of timber is to focus our logging on green trees in stands that have already been logged, and that means thinning those existing plantations. If you fly out of Medford, no matter what direction you fly, you're going over thousands of acres of clear cuts. You know, it looks like a chessboard down there. And those acres could be managed in a way to produce timber over time that's sustainable and predictable. But tying your economic cart to salvage logging means that some years you're going to have more timber than you know what to do with. And with Westside, a lot of that's going to be large diameter old growth timber that is not going to be milled locally and instead is going to go up to Douglas County. And it's not a sustainable way of building your economy. But focusing on restoration, on managing stands that have already been managed, and on reducing fire hazard in the wildland-urban interface, those are ways that we could really pull together and come up with a restoration and logging economy that we could sustain over time.
Right. Just in the last couple of seconds here, are you soliciting both of your groups' large numbers of comments to go into the draft environmental impact statement, George?
Yes, we are. We're doing a lot of outreach.
All right, Craig, you?
Yeah, we urge folks to support the Cutteroo alternative.
All right, and April 13th, is that right, is the deadline for input to the DEIS?
Yes, sir.
All right. Craig Tucker is the Klamath Campaign Coordinator for the Karuk Tribe. George Sexton is the Conservation Director of the group KS Wild. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having us.